Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Christine Anderson here, and I'm with
Dr. Toxel Ruck.
And welcome to Your Baby's Brilliant Brain. We're so glad that you joined us here today, and we have a special guest with us. And Dr. Toxel is going to introduce her.
So we are very, very proud to welcome Dr. Laura Tanis. I'll just be referring to her as Dr. Laura. She is a pediatric you're a pediatric chiropractor. Yes.
Yes.
Family practice. One of your accomplishments. So you started practicing in 1996 and you're currently still practicing in New Jersey. So you did end up doing a postgraduate education in pediatrics in 1996. That's when you got your diplomate, the DICCP. And you did attend Palmer College of Chiropractic, and that was specifically the one in Davenport, Iowa. There's three of those colleges now. But you originally graduated as a doctor of chiropractic in 1989. So you've been practicing for a really, really long time, which is amazing. You did have a pre-med education. You went to Scott College in Iowa. You went to Mott College in Flint, Michigan. And so you do have a very thorough background in health, which is great. And so after you finished your diplomate, you were then a postgraduate faculty member for Palmer College of Chiropractic, and you were also an instructor for a while for the diplomate as well. So you were actually teaching, and you went to places like Davenport, Chicago, San Jose, New York, Montreal, Auckland, Melbourne. So you've been all over the world actually instructing in pediatrics. And so that was in 1999, and you're still doing that. Then in 2006, you started teaching weekend seminars for Palmer College, that's again the chiropractic college, on pediatrics and pregnancy. And you do a lot of lectures. You basically go to these chiropractic colleges and inspire us to continue our education on pediatrics, because as we've talked about before, we don't get a lot of that in regular chiropractic school. So then in 2003, again, to current times, you've been a speaker at the Building Bridges Symposium on Chiropractic and Pediatrics, and that was in Barcelona, Spain, and also Paris, France, Montreal, Canada, Sydney, Australia, Scotland, the UK, London, Gold Coast, Australia, Dublin, Ireland. You've been everywhere. So that's just to give everybody a huge background on how your expertise has helped people all around the world. So,
well, not only that, but you ran the show for the ICA Council on Pediatrics conference every single year for how long?
15 years.
15 years. She ran the show. Last year was the first year she could sit back and enjoy herself because that was somebody else's problem. But I mean, you have been so active as a chiropractor specializing in pediatrics. You've been active in the ICA Council, which is the International Chiropractic Association. I mean, woman.
Well, and not just that, you haven't just been teaching. You're also a reviewer in the Journal of Clinical Chiropractic Pediatrics. You also co-authored a paper on best practices in chiropractic pediatrics that was actually published in the JMPT. So you've authored other articles. So, I mean,
you know your stuff.
You're a practitioner, teacher, researcher. I mean, you're the whole nine yards, or however they say it. So
not only that, but she's a mom.
And just a super person,
super nice person. Just such a joy to see every year at the council, the pediatrics conferences. So I've known you a long time, Dr. Laura.
I was going to just finish that up with, like, you sent me a whole bunch of credentials. Well, and I was basically, if I missed any important ones that you want me to really or want to focus on, please just let me know. It's just there's so much. Like, I can't even...
You're
to
hired.
Summarize them, yeah, would be insane. So we always kind of start off with, How did you get to this point? You know, how did you get into chiropractic? How did you get into being so passionate about spreading this message and getting so involved with chiropractic and pediatrics?
You know what? My story was, I was a pediatric chiropractic case. You know, I had such an amazing experience with chiropractic as, I'm going to say a teenager. So I grew up having all sorts of skin problems, a lot of eczemas, allergic to a tremendous amount of stuff, not a great overall health picture. I was the kid who had the 10 to 12 tonsillitis a year, missed a lot of school because I was sick, you know, could use one soap, one, you know, white cotton on my skin or I would break out. You know, I was the kid whose hands would crack open and bleed all the time because I had such bad eczema and dry skin. So my journey started when a family in our town, whose husband was a chiropractor, his wife had graduated high school with my aunts and uncles, and we're a pretty big family. So my dad was one of nine. We spanned generations in our town, and they asked me to babysit. So I went over there to babysit, and that particular chiropractor like took one look at my skin and my hands and said, "Hey, do you mind asking your parents if I could give you some nutritional support and I could actually adjust you?" So we didn't know anything about chiropractic at that point in time. My parents were taking me through the traditional allopathic route. I was going for ultraviolet light treatments weekly on my hands to try to heal the skin over. And I said, "Okay, I'll ask my parents." So I went home. They were on board. They didn't know anything about it. And they were like, "If it's not going to hurt you, then absolutely." And I will tell you, Dr. Christine and Dr. Toxel, within a 2-week period of time, my skin started healing up. I could, you know, be at a friend's house and wash my hands without breaking out in a rash. I, you know, after that point, my allergies improved every single year of my life to the point as an adult, I rarely have anything that even bothers me. You know, I can wear what I want. I can use what I want. My skin doesn't crack open and bleed anymore. You know, I went from 10 to 12 tonsillitis a year to actually being a very healthy child and not getting sick. So like for me, I was that kid, you know, in chiropractic that you wouldn't have even thought about chiropractic for the conditions or the diagnosis that I had, but somebody took the time to take an interest in me, even though I was a babysitter, and offer up another treatment option that my family would not have known to pursue any other way. So I was super fortunate. That family moved to another location in Michigan, and I worked for a second chiropractor, and through him, I learned a lot of philosophy, and I saw amazing things happen in chiropractic. And I will say to you that probably one of the most impressionable things that I saw was a grandmother that came into his office one day in tears because her first grandbaby had been born in our local hospital and was refusing to eat and not gaining weight. And because there was nothing physically wrong with that child or medically diagnosable, they were going to send that child home. And that grandmother is, how in the world is that baby going to survive when it will not eat? So I didn't know a ton about chiropractic, but I knew enough to say to her, "Why don't you talk to Dr. Fred? Maybe he has an option. Maybe he can help. Maybe he can give you information, you know, about what choices your family might have for this child." And they brought that baby in. And within a 2-week period of time, that baby was feeding, gaining weight, and achieving that baby's curve. And I just sat back that day in his office and thought, if I could make that difference in just one person's life, I would have a life well lived. So that's kind of how I got into chiropractic and why I'm super passionate about kids getting chiropractic care.
Yeah, no kidding. And you've helped definitely more than one, that's for sure.
That's so, the bonus.
Yeah. And I mean, it's this whole thing of, you know, listeners, we're talking about a time before internet. So, you know, we take it for granted now about finding out about information. You know, Dr. Google is great. You just type in baby failure to thrive or skin issues, and you can come up with a whole bunch of scenarios, and chiropractic might be in there, and there's Facebook groups and there's moms groups. But I mean, it just is amazing to me how one person talking to you changed your life, helped you out. I mean, who knows where you would be at this point. And you're now, you are this pediatric chiropractor helping kids because you saw that occur in an office. So just, it's phenomenal. It blows my mind away. And it's that ripple effect, that pebble in the pond spreading out for those ripples. Incredible. But you're going to tell us about some of these cases that you have been helping in your office. So I am so excited to hear about them.
I brought a couple of cases. I'm just going to look at some notes here that I want to share with some of the people that are watching your podcast, because in my practice of 31 years of working in chiropractic and having a family-based practice and seeing children, I believe people come into our offices not as usually their first option. It tends to be their last option. And when that happens, they come in carrying a lot of emotional issues and baggage with them as well, because I believe that hope is lost at some point when they can't find that diagnosis medically, or they can't find necessarily the help that they're looking for their child. So what I'm doing today is I'm bringing you a couple of cases that I saw in my practice, because I want your viewers, I want them to understand there is always hope and there is always potential. But with hope and potential becomes that responsibility that sooner is better than later. I know, Dr. Christine, you've been studying neurology. You have your postgraduate in neurology and functional neurology. And you understand, like I do, there's critical windows for repair and regeneration and growth and neuroplasticity. And this is what I tell patients all the time. There is always potential, but the sooner we start, the greater potential we have for that little being that's coming in to our office. So I want to start out with one of my cases. This case was near and dear to my heart. I flew back in. I was coming home from Australia from teaching the pediatric diplomate program, and I had landed in Newark, New Jersey, to open up my telephone to find out that one of our dearest and closest friends in New Jersey's daughter had went into labor and had a placental abruption. And the baby was born, but the baby had suffered a hypoxic incident. So that, for the viewers out there that are not familiar with hypoxic incidents, that is a situation where the baby was deprived of oxygen for a period of time and can result in brain damage or even fetal stroke. And, you know, this absolutely broke my heart. First, I was out of the country, you know, and second of all, that was not what I had hoped for this particular family with their first grandchild going into the world. So as soon as I got off, I was able to make communication with the family. Thank goodness, the mother's best friend, believe it or not, was just getting ready to graduate midwifery school. So she had her friend that was ready to graduate. So with the smart and intelligent decisions this young, you know, soon to be midwife made, it preserved the life of the mother and it preserved the life of that child. And for her, I give all the credit in the world, because she made the absolute right call that kept both of these people, you know, on this earth and able to be treated the way they needed to be treated for life-sustaining, you know, injuries.
Do you want to elaborate on anything in particular that she did that you think was really necessary to happen?
You know what, Dr. Christine, I think the most important thing is she listened to what happened, you know, when the mother called. So the mother was taking a shower and she felt a pop. And after that pop, she started to hemorrhage blood. And she immediately called her friend who was in midwifery school. And she just said to her immediately, you have to be in the hospital. And there were, you know, communications made after that, you know, she went along with her and made sure that she was immediately in the hospital. There was no time spent at home with this blood loss or anything else. Calls were made to make the hospital and the physicians aware that they felt that this was an abrupted placenta coming in. And that young mom was in the hospital, I believe it was within 15 minutes of the actual incident that occurred. So the team was ready to go, and they were ready to, unfortunately, address this life-threatening situation. And then the baby was actually born. But by the time that the baby was born, there was already, you know, a hypoxic period of time because of this placental abruption. So the baby was then taken from the local hospital to one of our university hospitals, where they're better equipped and better staffed at providing options for care. So this particular baby, I am going to go to some of my information just so I can be accurate. Let's see. The baby was taken to a university hospital. Like I said, she was transported. And there was this process that they could do at this hospital that they put the baby on what they called a cooling pad. And what it does is it lowers the baby's body temperature so we can actually slow down the rate of brain damage that occurs to that child. However, it always comes with its own side effects, right? As we know. So they explained to the parent there would be a small percentage that this would help the child. There, it would also bring about seizures once they cooled the baby down, that the baby would stay on this cooling pad for a 3-day period of time, and then they would gradually warm that child up. But during that period of time, as you can well imagine, the baby could have no social interaction. So the parents couldn't touch the baby. The baby could not be nursed by the mom. They couldn't really interact or handle the baby. She needed to just be left alone in this cooling type of process. So the, you know, just a lot of stuff for the family, because the mother was in one hospital, the baby's transported to another hospital, the mother finally gets there after a period of time. Now you can't hold your child, you can't spend time with your child, because they're going through a process to hopefully help that child with any more further degenerative process. So this went on. I was able to view the video from the NICU to see the seizure disorder in this child at a later period of time. But long story short, you know, after the cooling process was done and they warmed the baby up, then what they did is the mom was able to pump colostrum, and they were able to start giving her colostrum even by a Q-tip, you know, to start integrating, you know, what they wanted her to have as first food and first nutrients into her body. So this little one stayed in the hospital until her 11th day of life. And on her 11th day of life, I got a call from the family that basically said, "We are being released from the hospital. You know, we need to come see you." This young mother had been a chiropractic patient her entire life. And she said to me, "Laura, I know if I can get her to you, you can help me." This is just how much in her heart she knew she needed to get that baby in for chiropractic care. And Dr. Christine, you know, practicing a long time, you know, people put faith in you beyond belief, and you just, you know, you hope, you pray that you can help, but you know, we know the body heals itself, and we're just an instrument, you know, to help that or to assist that to happen. So we look at every opportunity as an opportunity for progress. And I, you know what, I didn't let the situation scare me. I let the situation educate me. So I had spent a lot of time reading and reviewing prior to that baby coming to my hospital. I'm going to be honest with you, they showed up my doorstep at like 20 after 11 at night, because we know chiropractic doesn't rest. There's no 9 to 5 hours in my world or your world. And we had bigger things to do, and we had bigger lives that had challenges to take care of. So I was able to have this little one in my arms. You know, she actually was pretty well nourished. She was able to eat on her own. So I did a feeding evaluation first up to make sure that she could suck, swallow, and breathe, because we know how important that is for viability of life, that this child would be able to gain weight and grow and maintain. And but some of her neurological reflexes were off. Like she had diminished startle response, and some of the other neurological reflexes that we check in children were, I'm going to say diminished. I won't say absent, but I'm going to say diminished. They were less than what I would have liked to have seen. But again, in the first 11 days of life with this child, it was a pretty extraordinary beginning for this little one. She was on phenobarbital for seizures. And so we had medication induced in this child's body as well, was just getting acclimated to breast milk and to be able to eat on her own. The really cool thing about this baby is, you know, I did her exam, and like I said, we had diminished neurologicals, but they were not absent. So I looked at that child and thought, you know what, let me work with her. And, you know, we'll just take it day by day, because our biggest steps is going to be just to basically see if we can just, you know, pep up that nervous system a little bit, get good growth and development, get the baby to be sustainable in life, and also see what we can do to possibly minimize the seizure disorder that occurred with the cooling process to help with the actual hypoxia of the brain. So long story short, with this little one, she was seen in my office for a period, you know, a period of time, almost on a daily basis. And that's because I think I was nervous not to see her on an almost daily basis, just to make sure she was eating well, that she was gaining weight, and that all of her systems were functioning appropriately. So we make sure we didn't have another emergency type of situation. So the really cool thing is with each passing week with this child, we saw progress. After the first visit, the mom reported to me that the baby wasn't as sleepy. The baby was actually had some alert time, which I always look for, because a sleepy baby to me will, or a baby who is just quiet and doesn't make a lot of movement or a lot of noise is never like a normal finding to me. You know, when children are vibrant and healthy and healthy nervous systems, they just want to gather information from their world, right? They want to eat, they want to make noise, they want to move, they want to do everything because it's how they're building their brain. So she noticed that there was an immediate alertness. She noticed that she could feed longer without becoming exhausted. And as we went from each week into chiropractic care, we started to notice that she was gaining ground. We were also, over a period of time, they were able to wean her off of phenobarbital. She had had no more seizures, so we were able to get her medication free. And she just thrived under chiropractic care. I will say to you that she is still my patient to this day. She is 7 years old, in the second grade, and she is teaching me video games on an iPad that I have no earthly idea how to play, but she's a very patient instructor for me. But she absolutely does not have any developmental delay. She is completely on scale for every gross motor, fine motor, every neurologic. She is not seen by a developmental pediatrician anymore. She is not seen by any specialists at this point in her life. She is just a healthy 7-year-old little girl that had a rough start, that loves to swim, loves to play hockey, and loves to play video games and try to teach anybody who will play with her. And I want your viewers to know that just because things start out difficult, it doesn't mean they end difficult. And in my office, I do not place limitations on children. You know, you and I have talked many a times before about the kids in our practice. And, you know, I always say I have, you know, the CCC, the Chiropractic Coincidence Club, because often, you know, we are always set, you know, we are always told when you have a child that has an ear infection for, you know, 4 years straight and, you know, 30 antibiotics, and they finally get referred to a chiropractor and they get adjusted and the ear infections go away and the kids are doing marvelously, that that was a coincidence. So like, I don't care, but I had this thing called the Chiropractic Coincidence Club. And I have many, many members with lifetime memberships, unlimited rewards, no cost to come in. And I am good. If that's what I'm doing is only providing coincidental changes in people's lives, like I'm okay with that. And we're going to keep up our Chiropractic Coincidence Club, because we just get to see these incredible changes and miracles every day in practice. So Dr. Toxel, going back to that long list of things that I do, that's why I get up in the morning. You know, it is, you know, it is an absolute joy for me to be able to work with patients and especially work with children and work with situations that otherwise may not change or have little opportunity for change somewhere else in the world. But chiropractic brings this whole new level of health care into that child's life. So every time I get to be a part of that, it makes me want to get up the next day and who can I see? Who is going to be brought to my office? Who is going to land on my doorstep? What challenge will they give me? But on the flip side of that is how can I share that with my profession to get people to understand that kids have every right to be in a chiropractic office as adults do. And they have reasons to be there. Just because they may not come in with pain or an auto accident does not mean they do not have a right to chiropractic care as part of their health and wellness program to grow these babies up. So this is why I teach so much. This is why I try to share that information because I am very passionate about this because I get to see these miracles every day. And there is not a day that goes that I wouldn't want a fellow chiropractor to be able to experience what I get to experience. I don't want a single family out there not to have an opportunity to take their child to a chiropractor who knows how to work with children, who's educated in working with children, to give that baby or that child or that adult or that pregnant mom every opportunity to achieve a different level of health and wellness. So, you know, hopefully some of the people that are out there, if, you know, if they've had challenges or they've had a baby who had, you know, in uterine stroke or a perinatal stroke or a hypoxic incident, I encourage your viewership, please seek out a pediatric chiropractic trained doctor to help you in your journey and to help you with your child, because she is not my only one in practice in 31 years, but I will tell you that each one of them has had their own special, amazing, phenomenal story in my practice. But
yeah, no, Laura, I mean, this is such great information for people, because I think you've touched on that aspect of having hope. And I understand exactly what you're talking about of, you know, the worn and the wary parents bringing their children in after they've been through a long line of doctors and they've been at it for so long. And I say to them, yeah, but you haven't worked with me yet. Yeah. So you haven't tried everything yet. And I almost prefer it when they've had all those pathological issues ruled out.
Yes.
And they've done all the testing and the CAT scans and the MRIs and the this and the that. And the medical people don't have anything else to offer. And so it's like, okay, guess what? I do. I have something to offer. And it's not based on even the level of their health, because a child can come in without any symptoms and I can find some things that I can help with that haven't presented yet, gotten bad enough. Just like those children who have major issues coming in, just because they have a major issue doesn't mean that there's not a way to tap into that neurologic system. So I love this story. It just warms my heart because you have definitely saved a life, not only the life of that child, but of their family.
You know, and it's amazing because actually her mother just started working in our office. You know, chiropractic is such a huge part of their life and a huge part of what she does consider that played a major role in where her daughter is at 7 years of age. And so she has been working with us now for a few months because the kids are getting older and she's got a little bit more free time. And I can't even put a better person at that front desk who can tell their own story. So it doesn't come from me, but she gets to embrace these other mothers that are coming into the practice that have had maybe rocky road journeys like what she did. And I find it being just as healing for her to be there for them is part of the healing process of what we can do, you know, when we see the child and we evaluate the child. And you know what, like I always tell people, I do my chiropractic job. That is what I'm trained to do. You know, I'm not here to take the place of, you know, the PT, the OT, the speech therapist, the, you know, the pediatrician, the developmental pediatrician, but at times it takes an army to help these children. And, you know, I am one of the foot soldiers for, you know, this child to do my job and to do it to the best of my ability. And I am just really glad that, you know, people like you, Dr. Christine and Dr. Toxel, that you guys are doing podcasts to try to open up the dialogue, open up the conversation, share the good news of what is happening out there. Because there's a lot of times that I find that people want to say that children should not be adjusted. You know, and we get the media presence that it could be harmful for them. And I want parents to know that chiropractic pediatrics and Dr. Christine knows by having the same postgraduate degree that I do, that we are working very hard on safety studies. And we are finding out with every study that we have been a part of that this is safe. And that if you are trained in taking care of children, you can provide very safe, comfortable care for these children. And I want parents to know that because I think that's one of the biggest concerns when they come in the practice is, will this harm my child or will this hurt my child? And that is an absolute okay question to ask any chiropractor that you are going in to see. And it is okay to ask them what their credentials are and how, you know, do they see children? Do they see them routinely? You know, there are a lot of great chiropractors out there that don't have postgraduate degrees that are very good at seeing children, but there are a ton of chiropractors out there that have postgraduate credentials that are extremely competent and comfortable handling some of these more difficult cases. So please call upon them, do your research, your due diligence, but don't be afraid to seek out chiropractic. Just be educated about the chiropractor you seek out.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And now we do have Google, so you can type in pediatric chiropractor.
Absolutely.
And I know that's how some people find me.
And you can actually take it a step further. So the ICPA, the pediatric program that I'm going through to get my diploma ultimately, they actually do have a search function on their website. So I believe it's ICPA, the number 4, and then the word kids.org. And you can actually search for pediatric chiropractors, ones that at least have been registered in their program and receive either a certification or diplomate. So you can even funnel through the search even more and it will go by state of who's registered there. And again, thanks to the internet, now it's not just, you know, word of mouth is great, but now you can actively seek these people out on your own and find them very, very easily.
And I believe the ICA Council on Pediatrics also has a search function on their website. And we'll put that information in the description for you all so that you can go to there and type in your zip code and find out who's in your area.
Perfect. Because there are a lot of willing hands out there that would be so happy to have you come into their office and just sit down and talk with you, you know, to see what options you might have and what, you know, chiropractic could bring to the table for these children.
Absolutely. All right. Have you got another case for us?
I have one more if we have time.
We do.
We have as much time as you have time.
You know me, I could talk a straight on 12 hours, but
I hear you loud and clear.
I'll tell you, you know, this is my love. So I have another one, and I wanted to bring this up because this one actually has to do with a genetic diagnosis. So I think these are always interesting because, as you know, taking care of kids that come back with either chromosomal defects or genetic disorders, sometimes we just don't have a lot of information to go on when we actually go to the books to become educated. And the one thing that I know I do, and I'm sure you do as well in practice, is that if we get something that is a genetic disorder based, we usually do our research. And that's because we need to make sure that there is not some anomaly to, like, the neuromusculoskeletal vascular system before we go in and we handle that child. And those are the most important things that I look for before I would ever put any type of an adjustment into a child's body. So I wanted to bring this one because this is one of the cases that presented in my office in a very strange way. But is so near and dear to my heart to this day. So this particular child was going to go through a foster care system. And I have a lot of foster parents within my practice that have brought me children over the year that may have been born into, a drug addicted mom, and they're helping hospitals out, you know, with the care when the children are released. But this little guy didn't have that. This little guy was diagnosed with a genetic disorder. So the foster mom who called me, who is a patient in my office, her kids are patients, her grandkids are patients in my office, and she's just like the forever mom, I call her, of newborns. So she helps out whenever she can. She gets multiple babies, but she called me because this was the first special needs child that she had in all the years that she's been caring for children. So when she got the call, she basically was told that this was a child with special needs. She didn't know much more than that when she called. So the first thing is history, 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 right? Can we go back and ask a couple more questions? Because that could include just a few things. So we were able to get this child in, and they were able to give a report on the mom. And unfortunately, the genetic disorder that this potential child had was Prader-Willi. And I have had several Prader-Willi cases in my office. And one of the biggest issues with Prader-Willi children is failure to thrive when they're first born. So this little one in particular was having difficulty gaining weight, had been in the hospital, had been in the hospital for roughly 4 weeks and had only gained a few ounces of weight. So the biggest concern for this child was to put weight on this child before they would have to put in some sort of feeding tube or J-tube to give this child food by a different mechanism. So this mom got this child, or this foster mom got this child, and she just said, "Laura, is there anything you can do?" Because her heart is, you know, as big as a house for all children. And she was just like, "Well, they're in my care. Maybe there's something that I can do to help this child as well." So the child came into my office, and as with any child that presents for chiropractic care, a thorough history are really the keys to my kingdom and the keys to my world. So in finding out about this child's history, there were certain things on the history that came in that just didn't seem to mesh with what I was finding as far as the child's status during the exam process. So we looked at the history, we wrote all the history out, but there were a few areas that I needed to, I think, address with a fine-tuned comb, because I'm like, there's no way the child can be hypotonous, inability to eat, had respiratory problems, was in the ICU, but yet had a normal Apgar. That just didn't seem incredibly, you know, correct to me at that point in time. So I want to encourage parents, take the full history and make sure that whoever you are seeing, whatever chiropractor you choose for your child, that you give them an accurate history, because it helps us in the information that we need to know to understand the physiology of what happened with your child, so that we know how to address certain areas of the body or have certain complaint or certain considerations for exams of those areas and for monitoring child's progress. So I always say, please take as much history as possible with you when you see. So this little guy had respiratory distress. He was in a NICU, low tone, had intrauterine growth restriction, cryptorchism, just a whole lot of things going on with this baby, which actually caused the hospital to do genetic testing. And then the genetic testing is what revealed what genetic condition this child had. So history is great, but history, again, does not limit me in how I'm going to proceed with this child. So when the little one was first brought into my office, the initial exam was a very low tone child that, I'm going to be honest with you, Christine, broke my heart, because I have never had a child in my arms that did not want to communicate with me somehow, either by looking at me or, you know, a facial expression or a body language of some sort. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And Dr. Toxel, you do too. There's a certain set of cues or communications that children give you when you hold them. And they usually love to be touched and to be nestled and comforted. And this little one to me was basically just a child in a world. And probably could care less if that child was in that world. And it broke my heart because it was not something I had ever experienced before with a baby. So we had low tone, we had no visual contact. Most of the infant neurological reflexes were absent. The ones that were not absent were diminished. I had no startle response. I had no gallant. I had no Perez. I had a positive scarf sign. So, you know, between neurological compromise, low tone, all of those rang red flags through that child's exam. I could stimulate a little bit of a Babinski reflex, but it was one of the few reflexes that I could even stimulate on this particular child. There was no rooting reflex. There was no suckling response. And so I'm like, without that rooting reflex and that suckling response, how in the world would we expect the child to eat, right? So in palpating this little one's cranium, it was the most interesting find. It was almost like everything was kind of very like gelatinous, jello-y, you know, just palpating the head of this child. I still to this day don't understand a whole lot about it. I have spoken to several people about it, but sometimes they said when there's dehydration, maybe that can be part of the reason, but I don't have any concrete, you know, validation for why that palpation was so abnormal. This poor little one was so dehydrated and so tiny and lack of weight that the only thing I put in my notes, Sharpei dog response. You know, I mean, I didn't know how to explain it any other way to myself, you know, but the child looked like it had more skin than body to fill out the skin. If anybody out there understands what that means. So I just put Sharpei dog, you know, because in my head, that's the only way that I could, especially the puppies, that I could understand how to explain what I was visually seeing upon examination. So this little one, not only with all of that, had an incredibly large fontanelle in the front. There was some very small cranium, very interesting head shape with this child, almond shaped eyes, absolutely no facial expression whatsoever. Like, the child did not make a noise. The child did not cry. You know, even when I would transfer the child holding the baby in my arms, that baby did not even exhibit a startle response when I moved that child through space. did not startle due to noise, did not startle due to movement. I did every one of those, you know, very fine functional neurologies to try to startle, you know, brushing the upper lip, you know, using fine touch, like a little paintbrush to try to stimulate. And I couldn't stimulate half of the neurologics on this particular baby. So this by far was one child that for me was probably one of the most critical children that I've had in my practice. So when this child came in, we had 7 days to get 7 ounces of weight on this child. And I thought, oh my goodness, the hospital got 10 ounces in 4 weeks. How am I going to get 7 ounces in 7 days? So you know what? That's where you just lift it up and say, you know what? We're going to do our job. We're going to do the best we can. And hopefully this baby has the recuperative ability to heal itself. And you know what? We're just going to do our job and see what happens. So this particular little one, when I started to work on this child, I worked on this child not only with chiropractic care, but I also did cranial work with this child too. And what was amazing is that I had videotaped what I was doing with this child because it was a foster child. And even though the foster mom had the ability to take this child for care, I wasn't 100% sure if that meant chiropractic or not. So I documented everything and I made sure that I videotaped everything we did in case it ever came into question at any other period of time. But by videotaping, probably one of the most amazing things that ever happened is as I was working with that child cranial, I got to see for the first time this child untuck his lip and all of a sudden open his mouth and mimic like a sucking response. And from that point on, we were able to get that child to start feeding. And we may have only been able to get like 3/4 of an ounce of food into the mouth of that child and into its belly. But each and every day that we worked with this child, we were able to get that child to start sucking and swallowing. Probably one of the most amazing things that I've been able to capture on film to see that change. Then I started to see movement within the extremities of this child. Long story short is that within a period of 5 days, we got 7 ounces of weight on this child. We did not need to go through a feeding tube. I recommended that they not use a regular bottle, but use a preemie nipple because the flow was too fast and the child was having a lot of problems with sucking, swallowing, and being able to breathe. So we pared that down. We continue to work. I will say to you that after 11 weeks of working with this child, the little one was adopted out with his brand new family. And I just want to tell you the difference. The baby had grown, let's see, in 11 weeks, the baby had grown several inches, but the baby actually went from weighing 4 pounds and change to 11 weeks later being 8 pounds, 7.5 ounces. The child had head growth. The baby was alert, awake, responsive to voice and sound, aware of its environment, had symmetrical movement of both arms and legs, improved tone, was eating well, gaining weight. He would cry finally softly. I mean, I know it sounds funny that you would ever be happy to hear a baby cry, but I'm telling you, like, it was time to have cake when I heard this baby cry. I'm like, that's it, we're having cake today. The baby had facial expression, would smile, would make eye contact, which I was just like, it melted my absolute heart. You know, there were still things that we needed to do. There was still a very diminished gag reflex with this little one. We still had a lot of like medial eye deviation going on. We had some plagiocephaly, but we started to see the Moro reflex return. We saw placing reflex return, rooting reflex returned, acoustic blink. So I knew that there wasn't any type of hearing issue for this child because I could get a Moro with position, but I could get an acoustic blink response and a Moro response from noise. The primitive reflexes that were completely present without any type of diminishment were glant, Perez, palmar grasp, plantar grasp, Babinski, you know, suckling, blink. Like, so we went from seeing only really a Babinski reflex with this child in a very low tone and a very decreased reflex in all extremities, to seeing a child that had just diminished reflex that was still working, you know, on pulling themselves together and neurologically re-knitting themselves into a series of those neurological tests that became absolutely normal by the time this child was now 15 weeks of age. And I had a great pleasure to see this child when this child was roughly a couple of years of age. And I think what was the most amazing thing for me is I saw this child walk. I saw this child drink from a juice box. I saw this child play with toys. I saw this child have the ability to, you know, pick up objects and play with toys. And this child, actually, I had the ability to have this little one crawl into my lap and just sit there nuzzled in my chest, because every time I worked on this child, I kept saying to this baby, you are loved. You are wanted. You are going to do great things. And I know this is a difficult time, but you are amazing and you are going to do amazing things. Because I just felt this child needed everything chiropractic, but everything affirmation as well, to know that I hear you. I know where you're at, and I'm coming to get you, and I'm going to reach out a hand to you. And together, you and I are going to do amazing things together, because your body knows what to do. It just needs a new opportunity. So these are the hopeful things that I want to give your viewership, because these are not just stories that I'm telling today. These are children that I have been blessed to be a part of their life. And I have been blessed to see the miracle of what the body is capable of doing. And I want every parent that is out there to understand there is no no or no can't in that equation. You know, it is all about possibility. And through great possibilities and a village to help that child, great things can happen every day. And after 31 years, I'm going to tell you, this happens day in and day out in my practice. And I could sit here for hours going over kids that have just accomplished amazing things on their own, but with the help of chiropractic care.
Wow. I'm almost speechless, because to hear, it's always amazing to me to hear about case studies. Most people like poo-poo cases. They're like, oh, case studies, that's not real. I'm like, well, it's real to the people it happened to.
Absolutely.
Where would they be without, you know, so if they were one case, that's one more person that you got to help versus what would have happened if they hadn't come in. We don't know, but, you know, making a difference in patients' lives. Again, it's that whole, we're often the last resort. We're usually never the first resort, except for families that have grown up in this. But when you're usually the last resort, they are coming in and they have that little smidgen of hope, because of course, that's why they're coming in the first place. But really, they've been working so hard and getting no results. So just, again, it's almost like, you know, they call it miracles. They call it basically a miracle. And you're like, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing what I was trained to do.
Well, and you're turning the power on.
Yeah.
I mean, this child was dying. There's no way this child was going to survive without turning their power on. And I mean, never mind that he's thriving. He wouldn't have survived. I know that. You know that.
You know what? There would have been extraordinary means to help him to maintain life. There would have been extraordinary, extraordinary means. But if
they didn't turn the power on, you can do extraordinary means. But if you don't have that top-down control from the brain,
right.
Then it's just going to be temporary and it's not going to be thriving. It's going to be maybe surviving.
Exactly.
It's such a different concept. You know, this is part of the issue too with getting the whole philosophy of chiropractic across to people who haven't been exposed to it, is that it's such a different philosophy from medicine, which is preserve the life at all costs, but not really weighing out what that cost might be and never questioning what is the cause? Why is this happening? What's going on in the body? So it's just, I don't know. It makes me really emotional when I mean, I got a little verklempt when you were talking about this patient, just because I've experienced this where you know deep in your heart that child, their life depends on what your skills are. So God, Laura, I mean, seriously.
Well, no, it's very inspiring.
Yeah, but this is, again, this is why I do what I do every day. Because, you know, if you can make and be a part to make a difference in the life of the child, you know, why would you fight that? You know, like, why would you fight that? And, you know, and I tell people, these are like, fantastic stories, you know, for motivational. These are real little human beings. These are real families that come in. And these are just, you know, these are the joys that you get out of chiropractic, because we just offer something different. And you're absolutely right. We look at the body completely differently than any other profession that's out there. And it's just, you know, Christine, you know, there's not an inch or a mile you wouldn't go to try to figure out how to help a family or to help a child, you know, that is in distress, because I know you guys are like me. We want everybody to have that ability to be the best person they can be and be as healthy as they can be. There is nothing better than getting Christmas cards of little kids that are doing great things, or the parents will save videos and say, I never thought this could happen. Or the child who has a cerebellar disorder rides a scooter for the first time, which never should have been able to ride a bike. And, you know, these are the blessings, and these are the cases that we get to see each and every day. And that's why, you know, I am so thrilled that you're doing what you're doing, because I am technologically not very good to even consider what you're doing. But to have people get the message out, you know, to the grassroots efforts, to have these parents understand, you know what, I might have another option to help my child or to help this family. I mean, how many times in your practice have you had children who may have had, you know, conditions that warrant them to be in the hospital? You know, there was nothing when I was first in practice, there was nothing that drove me harder to get my pediatric education than one of my first patients that came into my practice, severely handicapped, in a wheelchair, 100 plus seizures a day, mother with paper grocery sacks filled with x-rays and charts. And she walks in with this child and said, God sent me to you, and I'm thinking, I'm just praying, I hope I don't hurt your child. You know, it was like, it was so just freshly graduated Toxel, and you know that we do get education, but I was certainly not where I am today. And that child taught me the power of educating myself, and the power in believing what I knew, and the power in, you know, using what I knew to help that child. And I am telling you, you know, did he ever get out of the wheelchair and have a light switch event and, you know, 100% normal? No. But what was miraculous to that family was the, you know, within a few months, it was the holiday season. It was the first Christmas the entire family was able to be home together because that child wasn't in the hospital. It was the fact that that child went from having 100 seizures today to maybe a few seizures a day, or maybe a day without a seizure. So it impacts not only the child that we work with, but it totally impacts the whole dynamic of the family unit. So it's very powerful, but it's far reaching in what we do too.
Absolutely.
And that, you know, that again is just, you know, it's just the reason why we work 12-hour days. And
we work 12 hours? Oh, wow.
except for the night shift when they come to the door. No, but no, it's, you know, it's all good. And I hope that through our conversation today, it'll just give some of the families that are listening, maybe, you know, the confidence in reaching out and just trying maybe something new, because most of us that are out there that are educated in pediatrics are going to just sit down with you. We're going to tell you what we know. We're going to explain what we don't know. We're going to explain what we hope to see happen. And we're going to do our best for that child, you know, but ultimately the body will heal itself.
Ultimately, that's the only thing that can. Oh yeah. My gosh, Dr. Yeah. Laura, thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking all about how you've helped children with health issues, but not putting any limitations on, you know, doing what you do, getting out of the way and letting them take the lead in their journey for their health. I mean, this super powerful stuff, so empowering for parents too, to know that there are other options, there are other means if they're willing to just sort of look at a different modality than the traditional medical model.
And so one last thing before we go, because I'm sure listeners for this are going to want to know a little more about you, especially if they're in that East Coast area, because where do you work in New Jersey, or where's your practice?
I am in the northern part of New Jersey in a town called West Milford. So, yep, it's right on kind of the upper part of New Jersey where New York and New Jersey come together.
Gotcha. And so we'll post all the ways to contact you too in the description, sure. Everything. But yes, because you're still in active practice as well. So for any families that are in that area who are like, need to check out Dr. Laura, because she's
if you're in driving distance, you need to go see her.
Yes, exactly. So
get in your car now. Just drive.
And also, just to clarify, do you only still see children at this point, or do you end up seeing their entire families? Or
Dr. Toxel, I do a family practice. When I got my postgraduate degree in 96, I'm going to be honest with you, I could not just walk in one day and tell every adult patient, too bad, I'm out, you know, I'm not going to see you anymore. So I do a family-based practice. So yes, I do see adults. Most of my new patients at this point in time, though, unless they're family members, are typically pregnant moms and children, just because it takes me quite a long time to work with some of these children that I see in my practice. So we dedicate a lot of time to making sure they're well cared for. So yes, I do see all, but I predominantly take on the pregnancies and the little ones.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You're like me. I couldn't have a pregnant mom come in, take care of her. She has a baby, and you go, oh, well, no, too bad.
Yeah, I know. See you later.
No, absolutely. Well, no, and that's great. So now listeners out there can be like, okay, cool. I know where to go now, especially for in that area. And as I said, I'll also be putting in the websites where you can go to research more pediatric chiropractors. Because the difference between all of us, well, me, I'm learning, but you are specialized in pediatrics. You are specialized in working with children and pregnant women. Same with Dr. Chris. So plus both of you are like 30 years experience now, 31.
I thought she was going to say we're both 30 years old.
No. No. So
child prodigies, of course.
And so not that, you know, fresh out of the boat, freshly certified diplomate, potentially me in the future, pediatric chiropractor, but these two women have been in the trenches for years. And I call it being in the trenches because, again, we're in 2020 and people still don't realize that chiropractic is an option for their children. What we're trying to change.
It's getting better.
Absolutely.
But absolutely. I still hear, why would you adjust a child? So that's why speaking to you today, really re-emphasizing why it's important.
Well, thank you so much. I know you've got to get back to your busy practice. So thank you for coming on, and hopefully we'll be able to have you come on again and just share a little bit more about what you're doing in your practice.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for letting me share with you guys today and for all of those that are out there watching your podcast. Christine Toxel, thank you for doing what you do. You know, not only in your clinic, but outside of your clinic, because I know you're active in promoting chiropractic and pediatrics and wellness and all of that stuff. So thank you so much for all the hours that you two put in doing what you do.
Thank you.
And we're back after having an incredible discussion with Dr. Laura Tanis from New Jersey and hearing two very specific cases where children, babies actually, newborn babies pretty much on the cusp, were brought in not due to any sort of neck or low back pain, because those aren't typically reasons that we see children for, but to address certain issues chiropractically. So something that people don't think about when they hear chiropractic is they've got it in their head that we treat neck pain and low back pain. So why would we need to see children? Why would we need to see babies? And to reiterate, that's not what chiropractic is about. That wasn't the original goal with the chiropractic profession.
So absolutely, Dr. Toxel, there is this great aspect of pediatric chiropractic where usually kids are coming into the office not for things like low back pain or neck pain, but just for their overall body health, functioning, and well-being. So I thought I'd like to touch on a few things that Dr. Laura was talking about when she was mentioning what was going on with the baby with genetic issues, and that were the primitive reflexes were either absent or diminished. So primitive reflexes develop in utero. They help babies to be born and they help them to thrive and survive when they come out, especially in the first year of life. So she was mentioning a few primitive reflexes like the Babinski reflex, where you stroke the bottom of the foot and that you have the toes go up and the foot withdraws, and the Moreau reflex, where you go to lay a baby down and their arms go out and their eyes get big and they startle, and Gallant, where they you stroke the bottom their back and they kind of wiggle. This is one of the ones that they use to kind of come down the birth canal. And then the rooting reflex, and this is one of the first ones that develops, where you stroke the baby's cheek and they turn their face towards that stroking in order to open their mouth and get ready ultimately for feeding, especially with breastfeeding. And if babies don't have these reflexes, this is a lower brainstem function, if they don't have these reflexes, then their whole system is not going to be engaged in interacting with the outside world, which is what we need to develop our brain. And the fact that these are brainstem reflexes also reflects that this is where our activating system is in our brain. So she was talking about him being checked out. She was holding him and there was absolutely no engagement. Like his life force was just not there. So I love just watching and seeing as I'm working on babies, how they start to then have that expression once you remove that nerve interference. It's pretty amazing. And in this baby's case, it was basically life and death. And I've seen it myself in my practice where you can watch the child waking up. So it is pretty incredible. And we highly encourage you to seek out a pediatric chiropractor for your child and your family, and we will put those descriptions in, or those links in the description, so that you can find someone to help you and your family.
Thank you for joining us in today's episode, and if you have any questions, you can feel free to email us. And if you need more of that information, or if any of the information isn't clear, you can feel free to email us in the links we provide.
And of course, subscribe, share, like, review, all that kind of good stuff. We love hearing from you as well. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.